Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Gary Golio. He's a fine artist, a musician, a psychotherapist, and he's also the author of several great books about music for young people. We're talking about his latest book tonight, Dark Was the Night, Blind Willie Johnson's Journeys to the Stars. Gary, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be here on this lovely day.
Now, before we talk about your other books, let's talk about Dark Was the Night, Blind Willie Johnson's Journey to the Stars. When you write your books, what age group are you envisioning these books for? Because I'll have to say something. I really enjoyed them, reading them myself.
Well, you know, I don't think that way. And, you know, I'm not like a firebrand or anything, but I think of myself, I'm a little unorthodox. I mean, nobody thought doing a book about the young Jimi Hendrix was a good idea at the time, but it turned out to have won the Coretta Scott King Award for my illustrator, and then, you know, it was a great book. And so I get these weird ideas in my head, and I don't think about what age. I just write. I don't write down to children, though. I just write a book, you know, text that is clear and understandable. And yet, each book has a different voice. I try to be poetic in my way, not flowery. My things don't rhyme and stuff. It's actual prose. But, you know, to make them interesting, each story needs a different point of view. And I've had people use my Coltrane book. I've had adults call me up and tell me that their fathers or mothers who were into jazz, for example, in their 80s, that they were weeping when they read this book.
Oh, so, yeah. The Coltrane book is dynamite.
Rudy Gutierrez is like E.B. Lewis, who did the incredible artwork for Dark Was the Night. Like E.B., Rudy Gutierrez is a master of the medium.
Let's stick with Blind Willie Johnson and Dark Was the Night as a moment. How did you pick out? You have an entire library now of books. You have the Gary Golio library of books about musicians. How are you picking out? How did you choose Blind Willie Johnson versus some other artist?
Well, you know, I'm still about 10 years old, and I look a lot older because I'm bald, you know, but I'm really just 10, and so I go back to the things, you know, when they ask writers all the time, were you a real reader as a kid? Did you love, and I did, but I didn't read books as much as I read comics. I loved the early Marvel comics in DC, and I say that because it's the marriage of image and word has always fascinated me, and the Egyptians, the Etruscans, the Pompeians, all those people. I mean, you know, graphic novels today, all that stuff. So I think of, you know, when I choose a subject, it's somebody that really strikes, no pun intended, because they're all musical subjects almost, you know, that really strikes a chord in me. And Willie Johnson, I mean, I'm an avid a guitar player myself. I was really into electric blues. And, you know, all these people, if you ask Eric Clapton or Lucinda Williams or Jack White, you know, Jimmy Page, who's your favorite slide guitarist of all time? They will say Blind Willie Johnson. And once you hear Dark Was the Night, or Nobody's Fault But Mine, or The Soul of a Man, and of course, you know, they had that blues series a number of years ago that Scorsese did, and Wim Wenders, who did Paris, Texas, and Roy Cooter, used Willie Johnson's work and Dark Was the Night for the score for the movie. You know, once you hear that stuff, you can't forget his voice and his feeling.
I was just listening to Blind Willie Johnson just before I called you, just to get to sort of set the tone. And if people have not listened to his work, his voice is like the voice of an age, the voice of a people. I mean, it's amazing. It's haunting. It literally is.
It is haunting. And it's also, you know, and this was something that people always remarked upon, and it's in my book, you know, the tender, rough sound.
Yeah.
You know, if you hear Willie, he's kind of like, you know, he's singing like this. You know, it's kind of gravelly, and then it becomes angelic at times. It's tender. You're never afraid of the guy, even though he's giving you the chills. And like you said, his voice and his speech is kind of haunting. It's like it's coming from some mystical place in the beyond, you know. But
yeah.
He's never scary, you know. He's just kind of riveting. And, you know, he was a lay preacher. He wanted to be a preacher at 5 years old. And his mother died. And then through a sad accident, he became blind at 7 or 8. So he was born a seeing person and became blind. And so, you know, and the book does this. It's about, his work is about the balance of light and dark and heaven and earth. And it's very mythic. It's like, you know, it's about why are we here and what makes for a human being. And like he said, you know, what is the soul of a man? What are we about? And that's why I think it's so amazing that his song ended up on.
Well, this is what we're going to, what was amazing is that this story in your book is bracketed by the launch of Voyager 1 to the outer reaches of the universe.
Yes.
And to understand that his voice has now left our universe.
Yes. And you know, people ask me, Gary, you know, because I've been having a lot of interviews and people say, like, isn't that amazing? I mean, that's like the pinnacle of his, you know what I mean? It's not the pinnacle of his life, because his life was about, for him, his life was about faith.
Right.
He was an avid Christian. He really believed in the core of living a faithful life. And he saw himself as a lay preacher. In his last years, he ran what he called the House of Prayer in Beaumont, Texas, in southern Texas. And you know, to me, yeah, it's really a wonderful fact. And it says something marvelous about, it's like a little highlight, you know, that his song ended up, Alan Lomax and Carl Sagan put his song on the golden record on the Voyager 1, and it's out there beyond, you know, no human-made object has gone out into the universe as far as Voyager 1, and that's really cool. But if you listen to Willie, you kind of realize that it's not the golden record.
Right.
It's not Voyager.
Right.
It's the fact that we can listen to him, and now, of course, with the internet on YouTube or whatever, you buy a CD. You know, you can listen to Willie anytime you want. And he didn't die that long ago. I mean, I'm in my 60s, you know, so 1945 doesn't seem that long ago. But, okay, to some young people listening, they're like, whoa, that's like middle ages, right? You know, but okay, 1945, but it doesn't really matter. Here's a guy who was born in 1897, and so before the 20th century, and we can listen to him in such clarity because
right.
He came along in 1927, just when Columbia Records started using what's called the electronic process with a microphone and wires and everything, rather than vibrations and a cone, you know, like the original Edison listening the dog's voice, you know, the master listening to the master and all that stuff with the cone on old phonographs. So you can hear Willie breathing. You can hear his, whatever he used, his penknife or his bottleneck, tapping against the frets of the guitar. I just think it's marvelous.
Now, we didn't know that much about his life until relatively recently, right?
Yeah, and we have to, I think, give credit to the two men, two music journalists from Texas, Michael Corcoran and Michael Hall, who wrote these amazing articles. You can find them online. I think one is called The Soul of a Man, and something, the other one has a similar name. And, you know, a lot of people and many, you know, let's call them, you know, lay researchers, like Shane Ford, who's a friend, who wrote a book on Willie called Shine a Light. And Shane and his partner at that time, Anna Obeck, were responsible for having Texas do a historical marker where Willie died in Beaumont, you know, because he has an unmarked grave. We don't know where he is. But all these people, and Michael Hall among them, you know, all these journalists and people went to county courthouses and newspaper archives and microfilm archives, and they're digging through birth records and census records because they're so inspired by this guy. And, of course, they're all looking for gold. So, yeah, they found his death certificate, and it tells us certain things. But, you know, everybody wants to find more photos of Willie. There's only one. It was found by Samuel Charters in a Harlem newspaper photo archive. And I think the mystery only adds to appreciation of the man.
Now, his records sold really well.
He outsold Bessie Smith. I mean, he recorded his first in Dallas in December of 1927, and these were 78s.
Yep.
There's probably, you know, most of your listeners will know what a 78 is. It's an old 12-inch hard black plastic, well, not really plastic, but anyway, a phonograph record. And so his stuff came out in early 1928 when Bessie Smith was really big, and he sold thousands of those records.
Amazing.
Really popular, and most people listening would have said, well, that's the blues. But Willie always thought of his work as gospel.
Right.
And, you know, so, but you know.
Well, a lot of his songs, I mean, almost all his songs have to do with God and finding God and the importance of religion and spirituality in his life.
Exactly. I mean, for Willie, living life was a spiritual proposition. You know, he was, when he was out on street corners, which he was very good at, and he was a tall man. He dressed really nicely in a suit, and he had a trimmed mustache and hair, and you know, he was blind, and he had his guitar and his tin cup. He was famous for this tin cup he had on the headstock of his guitar. But he would stand out on street corners in Texas on, like, Saturday afternoons or Sunday mornings. And essentially what he was doing was preaching the gospel with his songs about how to lead a good life.
Right.
How to be a decent person, you know. And on the other corner, apparently opposite him, we have these reports that his friend Blind Lemon Jefferson was over there singing his blues. So it's pretty cool, right?
Good story. I also like the fact that he used a pocket knife as the slide.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it's funny because, you know, he actually went, quote, you know, kind of on tour with Blind Willie McTell. And we have, I think it was Samuel Charters recording. You can hear him. You can hear Blind Willie McTell on the internet, you can find it, and he's saying, oh, yeah, me and my friend, you know, oh, yeah, sure, I knew Willie Johnson. He and I went, you know, from Mobile to Maine on our tours. That's pretty far for, you know, for a blind man, and on trains and stuff. And he said that Willie used something like a brass ring. Who knows what that meant? Some people have said, and I believe, you know, the people who said it, said he used the back of a pocket knife, which many people did, and other people said he used a bottleneck. But maybe he did things differently at different times.
Now, this is just one volume, and I want to talk about the whole series in just a second, but you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch, my guest tonight. Gary Golio, he's a fine artist, a musician, psychotherapist, and also an author. And we're talking about his latest book. It is beautiful, and it's a wonderful story. Dark Was the Night, Blind Willie Johnson's Journeys to the Stars. How did this series start for you, Gary? I mean, there's a lot of books. I mean, God, there's ones about John Coltrane. There's ones about Billie Holiday. There's Bird and Diz. There's Carlos Santana. And Bob Dylan, meeting Woody Guthrie. I mean, where did this series start, and how did you even think about doing this?
Well, that's not forget Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin is the one odd one, because they're all musicians except for Charlie Chaplin.
Well, you know, he was an excellent musician, self-taught apparently, well, from what we know. But he played cello, and he played violin, and he wrote, several of the songs that appear or were the score for his movies, including the one you definitely know, which is Smile.
Oh, yeah.
So he was an and he would had a, you know, he was very musical, and you can see that music in his work and everything else. But okay, you're
well. But wait a minute, because if anything, I would have thought you have done a series of visual artists, and but thank God you didn't, and you did.
Well, yeah, I mean, the reason I started in truth was because. So I'll go back to the very beginning, which is my Tai Chi teacher was a man named Ed Young, and Ed Young was the person teaching Tai Chi in the town where I lived outside in New York on the Hudson River. At a certain point in my life, my wife and I decided to take Tai Chi because I was a pretty tense guy. I needed to learn how to relax, and she said, you need to learn to relax. So we did that, and this guy turned out to be, he's a tall man. He was born in China, and he's a wonderful, wonderful guy with a great sense of humor. But he turned out to be like, this masterful, award-winning children's book illustrator. And we didn't, we liked children's books, but the more we got to know Ed, the more he introduced us to, we'd go to his book signings or whatever in town, and we found, this guy's like won all, he won the Caldecott Medal for the best illustrated book two or three times. I mean, and so Susie, my wife, Susanna Reich, who's a wonderful writer and award-winning children's book author herself, she wrote some books, and she started winning awards. She's an excellent writer. And what happened was, at a certain point, I think it was around 2002, I was home, and I was playing guitar, blues guitar, and the more I got into the blues, the more, I kept seeing references to Jimi Hendrix, and I'm like, huh? And, most people, you ask a lot of people, where's Jimmy from? They'll say he's from Harlem. Well, Jimmy's not from Harlem. Jimmy's from what they used to call the Rainbow City of Seattle, right, of all places, on the West Coast up there, and somewhat north, I mean. And, now we think of Bill Gates, but I think of Jimi Hendrix, and there was such a diversity of people there. Jimmy grew up in this Rainbow City, and it shows in his music. And so one day, I got out the tome, the first tome on Jimi Hendrix by Glabeek and Shapiro called Electric Gypsy. And the first 30 pages or so, I'm like, wow. This is all about his childhood. Nobody knows this. This is the roots of the man and his music. His father had a beautiful voice. He had all these records of blues guys. And his father had, they had nothing. They had no money, but he would get records. And he let Jimmy listen to Howlin' Wolf and Lightning Hopkins and Muddy Waters. And this went into, Jimmy's musical soul at a very early age, 5 years old. And I said to my wife, wow, this is great. So we shared an office in our little house, and one day she's saying, what are you doing? You're busily typing. And I'm going, I don't want to tell you. She said, all right. I said, you're just going to laugh at me. And she said, all right. And so this goes on for a few weeks, and finally she says, you got to tell me what you're working on. And I said, I'm writing a children's book. And she said, wow, really? What about? And I said, you're going to laugh. You're going to think it's crazy. She said, no, I won't. I promise. And I said, it's about Jimi Hendrix as a boy and the roots of his music. She said, you're crazy. And, she read it. She said, this is really good. I love what you're doing. And people should know about this. And other people did think I was crazy. In fact, I finally, I got an agent who was really, I love him. Edward really believes in what we do. And when he was shopping the book around in around 2003 and 2004, people thought I was crazy. And one one editor, who happens to be a black person, said to Edward, "This is wrong. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't make a children's book about this man." And what she was referring to were, you know, the circumstances of his
death.
Jimmy's death, which are murky, you know, but hey, the man was a very sweet soul. People loved him because he was a sweet soul. And yes, he had troubles. I was an addictions therapist for many years. I worked with people who had addiction troubles, and I'm very sympathetic. And there's no reason to castigate this man, you know, because he was just like Willie Johnson. His music feeds us to this day. So I said, you know, I was very fortunate. I sold that book. It got on the New York Times bestseller list for a short period of time. It's a picture book illustrated by wonderful artist Javaka Steptoe, who won the Caldecott Medal about 2 years, two, 3 years ago. And that began this whole crazy journey that I'm on today.
What's interesting is the variety of musicians that you've chosen. And you were talking about drug use in your book Spirit Seeker, which is just absolutely stunning. John Coltrane's Musical Journey, which is also illustrated by Rudy Gutierrez. That has to do with drugs at the end. And there's a great piece at the very end of the book, a long sort of explanation about for young people about the problem with drugs and musicians. And I thought that was just perfect. But the story itself is an incredible story of him finding a spiritual center after going through all of that.
Well, your question, what you're saying, touches on so many things, especially in children's books. You know, you got to be careful. It's sad because I consider myself a very spiritually oriented person. I began with Christianity. I went through then Buddhism into yoga and Taoism and Tai Chi and all that stuff. And it doesn't matter to me what you call it. And Willie Johnson, sure, he was a Christian, but if he understood, if you spoke to him about spirit, he would understand. And Coltrane also, both of his grandfathers were AME Methodist Zion ministers in the South. And he grew up in his grandfather's church. And when he was like 13, all the men in his family died, like within a year and a half, his uncle, his father, his grandfather, and it devastated him. And he was a very sensitive guy. He was a black boy living in Jim Crow South in North Carolina. And, you know, I won't even go over some of the abuses that, you know, he suffered. And he began drinking at an early age, even though he was devoted to his music. And this is what people do. We use substances. Humans use substances, from alcohol to heroin, like, you know, Eric Clapton, whoever it may be, you know, Billie Holiday after the terrible things that happened to her as a child. And we use these substances to deal with and manage our emotions of sadness, fear, trauma, pain, whatever it might be. And so Spirit Seeker, you know, I was a little nervous, you know, because those lines, you know, to be overtly religious, even in children's books, you know, if you're not like a religious publisher, and my publishers aren't those things. But, you know, it's all about the power of music. And under music, you know, music comes under the heading of art, you know, for me, as all those things do. And so, you know, Coltrane used his spirituality in so many ways. He recovered from drug use after Miles Davis kicked him out of the group and said, you know, I got clean, you get clean. And he went to his mother's house in Philadelphia, where he had spent a good many years growing up in certain ways and learning music. And he stayed in his room for a week while his wife and his mother gave him water. And he was going cold turkey, which is a very unpleasant thing because he was coming off of heroin use. And he dedicated, you know, he said that was the year, 1957, when you know, the Lord, you know, God, in as he imagined God to be, which was a very expansive concept.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, it involved, like, Yusuf Lateef, who was a very famous jazz player, a friend of Coltrane, influenced a lot of folks. In fact, Sonny Rollins, whom I'm doing a book about next year, and Sonny and I, we actually talk on the phone a lot now because I interviewed him, and one day I interviewed him, and I was finished, and he said, you know, if you want to talk once in a while, you can give me a call. So, you know, I give him a call. We have a great talk, but he only wants to talk about spirituality, doesn't want to talk about music. And this is probably where Coltrane would be, too. So, you know, that book, Spirit Seeker, is very unusual because teenagers read it, young kids read it, adults who are into jazz read it, and it's really the same thing. Like, you know, what you said, like, there's a current that runs through my books. It's about the human spirit.
Right.
So let's, you know, we don't even have to say religious or whatever, spiritual. It's about the human spirit, and for me, that's a really grand thing. Humans do terrible things, true, but they also do very beautiful things. And, you know, Billie Holiday, for her to sing the song Strange Fruit.
Well, first of all, that's another amazing book. I have it right here.
Billie
Holiday and the Power of a Protest Song, which is Strange Fruit. The incredible thing is there's a whole end note about the reality of what happened, what the song is about. And, geez, I mean, that's amazing to read. By the way, that was illustrated by Charlotte Riley Webb.
Yes, wonderful artist.
Incredible artist. How are you hooking up with all these artists? What's are you choosing this? First of all, we've run out of time. And I feel like I've only started to talk with you about your stuff. So I'm going to have you back at some point just to finish up the conversation.
Cool. I love it. Sure.
Cuz I want to talk to you about your own artwork and your and your other books, which I think are just amazing. I have right here Dark Was the Night, Spirit Seeker, and Strange Fruit right here next to me right now. My guest tonight has been Gary Golio, fine artist, musician, psychotherapist, writer, and we've been talking about his latest book, Dark Was the Night, Blind Willie Johnson's Journey to the Stars. It's a fine, beautiful, wonderful book. Gary, it's been a pleasure.
I can't tell you how much it's been a pleasure for me, Mark. I feel like we're really synced here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're on the same frequency.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.